On April 23, 2006, three members of the Richardson family were viciously murdered in their home. Later, it would come to light that the murder was planned and executed by the last surviving member of the Richardson family and her boyfriend. This is the story of the Richardson family murders. Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Miko, and welcome to episode 68 of True Crime Timeline. Before we begin, I have a super special shout out that I want to give to Hannah, who is listening all the way from Ontario, Canada. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I said it three times because one, I want to say thanks for your review on Apple Podcasts. And two, I want to thank you again for subscribing to Patreon. I know that I've said it before, but I am truly blessed to have such wonderful listeners. Now, Hannah, the third thank you is for suggesting today's case. I did a little research and knew that I had to cover it. So, Hannah, today's episode is for you. Now, before we begin, I wanted to mention that if you want to support the show or you are a new listener and want access to the older episodes, please check out patreon.com/truecrimetimeline. For $3 a month, you can access the old episodes and also have my deepest gratitude for helping to keep the show going. So with that, let's begin. The Richardsons from Medicine Hat in Alberta, Canada, appeared to be your typical middle-class family. The family consisted of Mark and Deborah Richardson, who had been married for 15 years, and their two kids, 13-year-old Jasmine and 8-year-old Jacob. Now, like all families, they had their challenges, but nothing that they couldn't get past. Until Sunday, April 23rd, 2006. Because on that day, something unthinkable happened. It was a tragedy so terrible that it would tear the Richardson family apart forever. Around noon that day, a young boy went to the Richardson house to see if his friend Jacob was there. When nobody answered the door, the boy looked through a window and saw a body. Terrified, he ran home and told his mother. The mother then went to the house and she too looked through the window. Also seeing what looked like a body, she called the police. When the police arrived, they went inside the Richardson home and found a grisly crime scene. Mark, Deborah, and Jacob were all found brutally murdered inside the home. Two knives were recovered at the crime scene and both were stained with blood. The fourth Richardson family member, Jasmine, wasn't there, so police immediately appealed to the public for help in finding her by saying that it was in regards to an urgent family matter. Initially, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, or RCMP, thought that Jasmine might be in danger. But upon further investigation, they started to suspect that Jasmine was involved with this horrific crime. Early the next morning, in Leader, Saskatchewan, the RCMP arrested two girls and one man. The man was 23-year-old Jeremy Steinke. One girl was 19-year-old Casey Lancaster, and the other girl was Jasmine Richardson. And from this point, I'll be referring to Jasmine as Richardson. By this time, police had reason to believe that Richardson was in a romantic relationship with Steinke, and together, they had planned out and committed the ghastly murders of her family. Lancaster was charged with being an accessory to murder after the fact for helping Richardson and Steinke get rid of evidence. Richardson went to trial on June 4, 2007. She pleaded not guilty to three counts of first-degree murder. The Crown argued that Richardson had planned the murders because her parents had wanted her to end her relationship with Steinke. During the trial, jurors learned more about Richardson, Steinke, and the events that led up to the murders. Richardson had been a typical teen. However, a few years prior to the murders, she seemed to go through a change or transformation. She started using heavier makeup and had adopted a goth style. By mid-2005, she was posting profiles of herself holding a gun. Now, Steinke was into goth culture, and he had a history of dating young girls. And the two met and soon became boyfriend and girlfriend. And I read conflicting stories. I had read that the two had met at a punk rock show. And I read another story saying that the two had met at a mall. They were introduced by a mutual friend. And I'm not quite sure which one is accurate, but regardless how they met, their two paths did cross. Eventually, Mark and Deborah found out about the relationship, and they were not happy about it. So they told Richardson that she wasn't allowed to see Steinke anymore. Upset over this, Richardson came up with the plan to kill her family and get Steinke to help her. Online messages were found where she told him that she had a plan beginning with her killing her family and ending with her living with him. Richardson had even told friends about her plans to kill her parents, but none of them took her threats seriously. Steinke called a friend a few days before the murders and told him that they were going to kill the Richardson family. His friend didn't think he was serious about doing it either. Around 8 p.m. on April 22, 2006, the night before the murders, Steinke showed up at the same friend's house thinking that his friend was going to help him with dealing with Richardson's parents. However, the friend wanted nothing to do with it, so Steinke left without him. Around 10:45 p.m. that night, a different friend called Steinke. Steinke told him that he was busy watching the movie Natural Born Killers and would call him back. This friend never heard back from Steinke. The next day, the Richardson family were found dead. The autopsy revealed that Mark had been stabbed 24 times in the basement of the house. He had injuries in his eye, neck, chest, and groin area, and it was evident that he had fought with his attacker. His blood was found on almost every single object in that basement. Deborah had been stabbed over a dozen times. Some of the cuts were defensive wounds as she tried to protect herself from the attack. She died at the bottom of the basement stairs where she had been attacked. And little Jacob had died from having his throat slit and had also sustained stab wounds on his face and chest. There was also evidence that he had been strangled. Richardson testified that she woke up to the sound of Steinke breaking into her home. She said that her mother went downstairs and then she heard screaming. Her father went downstairs and then she heard fighting. She grabbed a knife and hid in her closet. Steinke came upstairs and found her, and he ordered her then to stab her brother. She said that Jacob had pleaded for his life, but she stabbed him and slit his throat anyway because she thought it was cruel to leave him without parents. She said that she was in a zombie-like state during the murders, which was why she didn't try to stop Steinke. She insisted that when she had previously talked about killing her parents, that she had only been joking. However, the Crown told jurors that her being in a zombie-like state wasn't supported by the evidence because they said that after the murders, she packed clothes, tried to take money from an ATM after stealing her mother's bank card, and then took a taxi to Steinke's trailer. Hours later, she and Steinke had sex at a friend's apartment and were seen at a party cuddling. All of these actions indicated that she was not in a zombie-like state. At any point, she could have called or asked for help, but she didn't. During the trial, jurors were taken to the Richardsons' home to view the crime scene. The images of blood told the horrific story of what Mark, Deborah, and Jacob went through in the final minutes of their lives. Blood was smeared absolutely everywhere. On the walls, floor, and in Jacob's room, even on his toys. Now, while in prison, jurors heard how Steinke proposed to Richardson through a series of letters. She wrote back stating, quote, "I never thought I'd find myself hysterically laughing in a holding cell in these kind of circumstances. But still, you make me so happy. Yes, yes, I will. I would love to," unquote. These were the words of a girl who was responsible for killing her entire family. Clearly, she had zero remorse for what she had done. On July 9th, 2007, the verdict came in. It only took the jury in the Court of Queen's Bench in Medicine Hat 3 hours to find her guilty of all 3 first-degree murders for her family. She was sentenced on November 8, 2007 to the maximum amount of 10 years, but was given credit for the 18 months that she had already served while in custody. Her sentence is known as an intensive rehabilitative custody and supervision sentence, meaning that she would spend 4 years in a psychiatric institution rather than a youth detention center. In 2011, she was released from the psychiatric hospital and moved into a group home. The remaining years of her sentence were used to prepare her for re-entering society. Steinke was also charged with 3 first-degree murders. Jurors in his trial heard conversations that Steinke had with an undercover officer. On those audio tapes, he tells how he told Mark, the father, in his final moments alive, that Richardson wanted this to happen. He also talked about how he watched Richardson kill her brother. He said that she didn't cry while doing it, and the next day she was laughing about it. Within 11 hours, jurors in the Court of Queen's Bench in Calgary convicted Jeremy Steinke, who later changed his name to Jackson May, of the first-degree murders of Mark, Deborah, and Jacob Richardson. On December 15th, 2008, he was sentenced to 3 life sentences to be served concurrently with no chance of parole for 25 years. Over 250 friends and family attended the funeral for Mark, Deborah, and Jacob to say their final goodbyes. The eulogy touched on the qualities that made all 3 of them so loved and missed by all. Mark was a dedicated husband and father. He always made time for his family by taking them swimming, camping, and just being present. He was known as an honest, sincere, humble, and generous man who was easygoing and well-liked by everyone. Deborah was a devoted wife and mother. She always tried to nurture her children emotionally, spiritually, physically, and mentally. She always stood by Mark's side, backed his decisions, and loved him unconditionally. I read that little Jacob was full of energy and had a heart of gold. He loved baseball, playing catch, skateboarding, or pretending he was a Jedi Knight. He was also known for giving the biggest, warmest hugs. You will never be forgotten, Mark, Deborah, and Jacob Richardson. So that's a wrap. Thank you so much for listening. Check out the True Crime Timeline Instagram page and Facebook group for pictures about the episode. I'd also like to thank and acknowledge the many sources that were used for this episode. This podcast would not be possible without these sources. And if you like a list of the sources, want to request a case, or just say hello, leave a message at truecrimetimeline.com. So with that, take care and stay safe, everyone.